In this episode, we're talking to Georgie Heshen about technology in education. Let's get into it.
Welcome to the Marymount Paris podcast, where you can find out more about the school. Each episode, we'll be speaking to people in the school community to let you, the listener, discover what life is really like at Marymount. But enough of this intro, let's get into this episode right now.
Georgie, thank you for joining us on this episode of the podcast. How are you today?
I'm really good. Thank you, Simon. Lovely to be here with you.
Well, it's great to talk to you. And here we are recording this on a Monday afternoon. And to me, it feels like the warmer weather is just starting to come here in Paris.
It is. It definitely feels like Paris today, and the trees are out and the sun is out and it's wonderful.
Now, tell me where you're from, because I'm picking up an accent that's not a Parisian accent.
No, I'm from Australia. I've been living in Melbourne for 11 years, but I'm actually from a town called Swan Hill, which is 3.5 hours outside of Melbourne. So I'm from the bush.
Okay.
Originally.
Right.
Yes.
And then what brought you across to Europe then?
My parents are actually Irish, so I've always wanted to live over this side and be closer to Ireland. And I was, like many people of the world, I was drawn to Paris and excited to see everything that it has to offer. So I have been a few times, but I was really keen to actually live here. So yeah, I'm living the dream.
Right. Lovely. Lovely. So, Georgie, when I was young and when I was at school, we didn't have such a thing as a technology integration teacher, which I understand is what you are. So what is that in a school, and how is school different compared to how school used to be when some of the people who are listening to this might have been at school themselves?
So I myself also didn't have a technology teacher when I was young either. So I completely understand that question. So basically, I teach a range of different areas of technology in specialist classes once a week with the whole school, from the early learners right through to the grade eights. But basically, I teach digital citizenship. So how do we, you know, have positive interactions online, and also cyber safety? How can we keep ourselves safe online? I also teach computer science, which has a sort of, it's a big broad term for basically like how do computers work and how do we make them work? And that's where coding comes in. So it sits under computer science. I also teach digital skills such as navigating like common software that we use at Marymount, such as like the Google Suite, as well as other apps that I really enjoy as well. Like a couple of them are like Book Creator and ChatterKid we've been doing as well. Lots of a range of different digital creative apps. And then I also teach design technology, which is the design process to solve problems with creativity. So I used to also be an art teacher, so I like to bring a lot of creativity into my lessons and into technology. So I definitely don't see technology just as a standalone subject, but something to be integrated across all disciplines and areas.
It's a beautiful combination there. I love all of that. One of the first things you mentioned was about relationships online, I think you said, within digital citizenship.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about that, because I imagine that parents sometimes get a bit terrified when they think about their children being online. And, you know, as soon as you talk about relationships online, I think any parent would have a small alarm bell, or a large alarm bell going off inside their head. Tell us a little bit about that.
The relationships would be under the umbrella of the older students, so the middle years kids who are engaging online with each other through games and different applications and social media. So it's about teaching, giving them the skills to understand how their data is being used and understanding how they can protect themselves from that, but also how they have positive relationships with each other online and what to do when or if those not so good interactions can happen. So who to go to, who to turn to for help. And then what does that look like at a younger level? Well, it would be, you know, I accidentally see something online that I'm not supposed to. A lot of applications have ads that come up and kids can click onto them and go to all sorts of places. And so it's just about them being aware that, oh, something's come up on my iPad that I don't know, or whatever device it is, it's come up and I'm not too sure about it. So I need to go and ask an adult for help. So it's about getting them to really have that ingrained in them to go and get help immediately. And also maybe some of the feelings that they might get if they see something that might make them scared or feel sick, and just try to reassure them that they can go and get help and that they're safe. So it's a very, very important area of technology. And that's definitely something that we have in our curriculum here at Marymount.
It's really reassuring to hear this, because I imagine that for some children, if they're not taught this, then if they did click on something completely by accident, they may well think that they'll get in trouble for either letting an adult know that they've come across something by accident, or that they may be fearful that if they don't tell an adult, that the adult may find out and then they might be in trouble for it. So it's good for them to know from the teaching that you're providing that actually it's a safe space that they can speak to an adult and say, look, I've arrived here. I don't know how I got here. I may have clicked on something, but I'm letting you know.
Exactly. And once they do know that and they're reassured that it's the right thing to do, they'll come and tell you straight away, which is really good. So not that you want them to have these experiences, but, you know, the internet, there's a picture book that we've read called The Internet is Like a Puddle. And it is like, it's actually more like the ocean, really, but it's deep and it's not, you know, controlled by any particular group. So it's kind of a free for all on there, and it's very fun, but we also have to be aware of the dangers. So that's definitely an important area.
So how do you go about teaching these things when you go from one class to another class? What's your teaching approach there?
So, well, I try to integrate the digital skills into every lesson. So, for example, touch typing would go under digital skills, or a little sort of tutorial on the different interface of a particular app we're using. So that kind of, that comes into every lesson. And then I do sort of units of work where I can pull different things in. Say in the digital citizenship, you would also have things like copyright for the older children. And at the moment this afternoon, we were looking at the Cricut machine that we've got in the Fab Lab, which is a cutting out machine. And we're making our own stickers to put on water bottles. So I was showing them an app that we're using to get some images from to make our stickers called Canva. And some of the kids wanted to use Amazon as their sort of sticker. I'm not sure why, but they were excited by that. But there's an opportunity to then bring in copyright. So we spoke a little bit about it this week, and then next week we'll go into that. But I guess whatever the kind of project that we're doing is, I always try to bring in the different parts. So they're planned into it. So design always, we're always having to link with copyright as well, so they understand that they can't just take anything off the internet and use it. And that would be probably from, they should be aware of it from grade 3, but then I try to enforce it from grade 5 up. So even when we're making, say, our own movies and they want to use particular music, they're introduced to the law of only using 30 seconds of a particular song. That's acceptable. But then trying to get them to use royalty-free music. So depending on the project, I work out if it would be a good fit. Sometimes it might just be a standalone cyber safety unit that we do. So that's sort of how I plan, based on sort of backwards planning, kind of starting with a project idea and then going back and bringing different parts together. And also linking in with what the classroom teacher is doing. So at the moment in grade 4, they're looking at different fossils. So in class, we've been using Minecraft Education, and we're going to have a look at creating a fossil dig within the Minecraft world. And then we're also going to make fossils in the Fab Lab and record our process. So there's a lot of different things going on there. You've got computational thinking, you've got design process, and you've got film and hands-on. So I think in that particular project, I don't know where the digital citizenship would probably fit, but I think that would definitely be having positive interactions while in the Minecraft world and speaking to each other, like with courtesy and respect. Courtesy and respect, and that's developing their collaboration skills.
So tell us a little bit more about other projects, because, you know, I'm thinking that some people listening to this, they may have heard of things like Minecraft, and they don't really know whether Minecraft is a game or whether it's an educational tool or whether it's kind of gamifying education. But tell us a bit more about that.
So Minecraft Education is the educational version of Minecraft. Unlike some games, Minecraft in itself actually does have educational benefits, but Minecraft Education is a safe and a completely educational focused version of Minecraft. So they've taken basically all of the educational parts of Minecraft and they've put it in a safe space that kids can access. There are some kids who do play the regular Minecraft, and I like to think of myself as a crafter for Minecraft Education. So I'm not completely aware of everything with Minecraft, but with Minecraft Education, there's basically a massive range of resources you can draw on and projects that link to different disciplines, like art and science and humanities. There's a load of different things to either for the kids to interact with, but also to inspire teachers as well. There's things like Mini Paris and Mini Melbourne I've used in the past, where they can go in and kind of interact with the city, and they can come across little signs where they call them NPCs, non-player characters. They can go up to these characters, and the characters are kind of almost like teachers. They have the writing up the top that will tell them what they have to do in the task, or it might just be give them information about whatever there it is, that whatever part of the world that they're in. So there's a lot of opportunities in it. There's also something called Code Builder, where you can access a coding extension for Minecraft, where they can actually build more quickly by using code. So they use something called the Minecraft Agent, which is like a little robot that's in the Minecraft world, and they can use him to, or her, to build. So it's very engaging. Also, collaboration as well. They're able to work together. There's a live chat within the world where they can talk to each other. So the kids really, really enjoy it. And it's definitely something that can be used not just in technology classes, but it's an exciting application to use across many areas.
Now, I'm really glad that you mentioned NPCs, because I watched a film recently with Ryan Reynolds. It was called Free Guy. And he started talking, well, in the film, they were talking about NPCs. I had no idea what an NPC was. It was a good, fun film. It was a good bit of family entertainment. And I watched it and I enjoyed it. And I learned something about games and about NPCs and about non-player characters and things like that. But equally, you know, I am a dad. You know, I'm a guy in my 40s, actually just turned 50, but that's irrelevant.
There you go.
So how can people of my generation, parents of children at school right now, how do we keep up with what's going on?
I think the kids sharing their work is definitely one way that we can connect what we're doing. You know, I suppose as teachers, it's our responsibility to keep up with what's engaging the kids. And I suppose even myself, before I'd sort of interacted with Minecraft, I was a bit skeptical. And even though I like technology, I didn't know for sure if I wanted to kind of go down that path and felt that it might be gamified. But after doing some professional learning with Microsoft, who are the developers of Minecraft, and after using it with my students, I could see that the engagement level was extremely high and that the learning was focused as well. I think it's that is then the driving force, that the teachers are aware of what's engaging the kids, and then we can bring that into the classroom, which then in turn we can share the work and educate the parents. So I think that would be the cycle that I would sort of see happening. And using things such as the digital portfolio, which the students use in the older year levels or in at a more junior level, because kids could still engage with Minecraft education from grade two. It could be a screen recording of what they've done with, I guess, what we're doing now, an overlay of audio to explain their learning as well, so showcasing it in that way.
That's reassuring to hear. That really is. Big shout out there to all the parents that are listening to this right now. It's hard really to talk about education and technology without mentioning AI and concerns that come with that, but also the opportunities that come with that. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there at school.
Exactly. Well, I see myself as a bit of an adventurer of AI, because, you know, I think being a technology teacher, people come to you for the answers, but there's not a clear direction at the moment for AI in education. There's a lot of experts out there that are working on these questions. And I think that's at the moment, that's where I'm drawing my understanding from. I am looking at what's out there at the moment and what is recommended. I think that it is the future. It is definitely going to be something that will revolutionize our lives. However, I'm also looking to the Vatican and to the Pope, and also having that at the center of, you know, being a Catholic school, at the center of how we are engaging with AI. And the Pope's message is that we do not want AI to replace the wisdom of the human heart. And I suppose what that means is that, you know, to take away our humanity. And an example of that is like what happened in COVID, where we were using technology all the time and we were lethargic and we were not having that, human interaction that is vital for our lives. So I think that's definitely a guiding light for us, and then combining that with the experts in computer science to hear, to see their recommendations. So at the moment, we're piloting some grade middle years units and actually a grade five unit as well. So there's lots of different aspects of AI. There's a lot of overlapping disciplines within AI, such as machine learning, generative AI, computer vision, and natural language processing. And at some level, you would have engaged with all of these types of AI through the different apps you were using on your phone. So what I've tried to do is have a look at where we can fit them into our curriculum. And so I guess probably one of the most fun AI kind of things is generative AI, where you can sort of type a prompt in and then it will create something for you, or you can engage with it in some way, you know, if that's creating songs or even in videos as well. So for grade five, we're looking at generative AI and the biases in that as well, because obviously it's drawing from a large database of images to create this. So sometimes the images are not always an accurate or fair depiction of society. So it's really interesting. So that's what we're doing in grade five. In grade six, we're looking at machine learning. Once again, the biases in that as well, that their algorithms that are programmed and the way that they are fed information can also change the outcome. So for example, we were looking at identifying fish and their features, if they were, they were little cartoon fish, if they were angry fish or happy fish or different emotions, and how the AI was choosing, we found out, was actually based on the color of the fish. So all the red fish were angry. So that was a really good activity and example of machine learning and the importance of what I call clean data. So really a lot of data and accurate data that tells the machine, actually, no, it's the priority is low for the color of the fish. What should be up the top as most important would be the facial features. So that was an activity we did in grade six. So then in grade seven, we are looking at another type of machine learning, which is reinforcement learning, where basically the algorithm is learning by itself. And they're doing this through Scratch. They're creating a game, it's called Make It Fly, which is a kind of common Scratch tutorial, but we're using AI to create an opponent that can beat you while you're playing the game based on AI. So it learns, it kind of observes what you're doing, and then it learns from that. So we've got a range of different units going on at the moment for AI, and always trying to bring it back to how is it being used for good, and then also what are its limitations and sort of the concerns that could be related to that type of AI.
I love the way you're exploring all of these opportunities, but also just balancing that with caution for the sake of our children and for the sake of humanity as well.
Exactly.
And Georgie, earlier on, you mentioned about the Fab Lab. Now, I know what the Fab Lab is because I've been in it. But again, for anyone listening who's never been in it, maybe they've never even heard of it, tell us what it is.
Yes. And I think a lot of people just think the Fab Lab is just like a fab laboratory. And it's sort of right, but it's a fabrication laboratory. So it's a space where we use technology and I suppose creativity, very important, to create. So we've got loads of different machines in there. So I think I was speaking about the Cricut machine earlier, which is a cutting out machine. We've also got a range of 3D printers in there. One of them, which is really cool, that has two different types of filament, which is the plastic that you use to print the different models with, and one of them is actually a water soluble filament, so it can be used to kind of build the structures around the model, and then you put it in the water and the filament runs away, so you have a very clean, smooth model. So that's a really exciting 3D printer. We've also got the Glowforge, which is a laser cutter machine, which it can cut wooden metal. So that's a really interesting machine as well. And we have an exciting design project for some of the middle school students to partake in, to design caddies for the Fab Lab and using the Glowforge machine. So that's a project that we've got underway as well.
Georgie, it strikes me that you've got an awesome role there at school, because clearly you're passionate about technology. You've got a background in creativity. You mentioned that earlier on, but also it's just integrating those two together. It's such an awesome opportunity, I think, for the children to have you in school there, where you can evangelize technology and creativity at the same time. But like we also talked about, getting that balance right, it's a Catholic school, and you know, you mentioned about the Pope, so you know, talking about values there as well, it's such a great combination of all of these great things.
It is, yeah, it really is. And it definitely, I think there's a lot of, you know, cool things that you can do with technology just because, but then when having that layer of, you know, how can we solve problems that are meaningful to, you know, to people and to the world as well. And a lot of the time I use the sustainable development goals as a sort of guiding, as inspiration, as a way to solve the problems that we do have in the world. But I think there always needs to be, for children, there always needs to be hope. I suppose for humanity, there always needs to be hope. And there are already so many amazing innovators out there in the world that we can draw on their solutions to inspire us in the classroom. So I think we definitely have the future innovators in our rooms at Marymount.
I love that. Georgie, last question. If anyone's been listening to this and they want to get in touch with you, how could they do that?
Through email. So my email is gheshion, H-E-S-S-I-O-N, at marymount.fr. And if you're around the school, you are always very welcome to pop into the Fab Lab and see what we are creating in that space.
Perfect. Okay, well, Georgie, thank you very much for your time. Adventurer of AI, you mentioned, is a great way to describe yourself. I couldn't agree more. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Simon.
That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions at all, then do please get in touch with the school by visiting the website www.marymount.fr. But in the meantime, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.